From the Wings Archives, in honor of Black History Month, Professor Merlene Petrie tells the story of Lulu Bell White, whose indomitable presence and tireless work were pivotal in securing Black Americans' right to vote in political party primaries and in building a strong voting presence for furthering community goals. Dr. Petrie is a history professor at Texas Southern University. She wrote the book In Struggle Against Jim Crow, Lulu B. White and the NAACP, 1900 to 1957, Texas A&M University Press, 1999.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. In 1990, African-American women gained record numbers of high political offices in the United States with the backing of the Democratic Party. But as late as 1944, some states had laws forbidding Black people from voting to choose candidates of the Democratic Party. That year, the so-called White Primary Law of Texas was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. The attorney who argued the case, Thurgood Marshall, sits on the Supreme Court today.
She would write Thurgood Marshall many times and say, put your big long feet on this table and make damn sure you read everything that's on this letter.
Dr. Merlene Petrie told the story of Lulu White in Dallas at the first annual conference on African American history in Texas. Merlene Petrie.
History is a very human thing. But human history, like the concept of human being, is understandable only as a reality which unfolds and is expressed by particular peoples in particular societies at particular periods in time. Today, I'm to speak to you on the role of Lulu White on African-American politics in the 20th century. Reconstruction altered the status of more than 3 million African-Americans. Under the Reconstruction Acts of 1867, and the supervision of federal troops in southern states, approximately 700,000 Blacks qualified as voters and participated in the political affairs of local, state, and national government. In Texas, between 1868 and 1898, 41 men of color sat in the Texas legislature. 15 helped to draft 2 constitutions of the state, and scores of others served in other capacities. These Black politicians did leave a credible record. They offered resolutions, declarations, and bills which showed merit and rendered services in other areas which demonstrated not only the concern for the people they represented, but also the welfare of the state. In a word, these Blacks left a legacy. But this legacy was short-lived. It had just about faded by 1900. By then, Blacks in politics were caught up in a 3R syndrome: rejection via violence and intimidation, reduction via gerrymandering, constitutional restraint, and removal via the Texas white Democratic primary. The white primary was like an iron curtain, for even if Blacks became literate, acquired property, and paid poll taxes, they could not conceal or change the color of their skin. Thus, they could never, as long as the white primary stood, take part in what became the most critical step in Texas' electoral process. To Black Texans, the white primary symbolized their powerlessness, their second-class citizenship, their caste-like position within the total society. The specter of white men voting when Black men could not, reminding them of their inferior status. Hope, however, did not die because they could not vote. Instead, to many Blacks, the will to become free, really free, grew even stronger as Black Texans, most specifically Black Houstonians, embarked upon a 30-year struggle to break the back of the white Democratic primary. Of this struggle, we have some knowledge of what Black men wanted, did, and achieved. What is not so well known is what Black women wanted, did, and achieved. One such lady was Lulabelle Madison White. Very little is known of Lula White. We've heard speakers mention the contribution of many ladies, and Lula White's name was not mentioned. It was not mentioned because nothing has been done on Lula White. Still, Lula White was one of the foot soldiers of the 1940s and 50s. Lula White was the omnipresent representative of the NAACP. Lula White was on first-time basis with Thurgood Marshall and other members of the NAACP. She could rightly be regarded as the matriarch of the civil rights movement of Texas. Lula White's concern for civil rights stemmed from being born black in Elmo, Texas, a small town in East Texas where racial tension was high and the Ku Klux Klan was prevalent. The 10th of 12 children, Lula was born to Easter Madison, a domestic worker, and Henry Madison, a landowner, in 1908. After being educated in Elmo's public school and attending Butler College for 1 year, Lula had an important decision to make, whether to remain in a small college setting where she would be a marginal individual, or to seek another world where she could work to affect racial problems affecting blacks in the South. Lula chose the latter alternative, and in 1925, transferred to Prairie View College, where she received a bachelor's degree in English in 1928. From hindsight, it appears that her move to Prairie View was a good one, for it was there she met and married Julius White, a longstanding member of the NAACP, who had served as a plaintiff in several white primary cases. Shortly after her marriage, Lula White became an activist with the NAACP in the struggle to eliminate the Texas white Democratic primary. It is important to note that Lula did not join the NAACP thoughtlessly or simply as an extension of Julius's involvement. While still a student at Prairie View, she became involved in every movement for social change on campus. When she became the first vice president of her senior class, she stated that one of her major goals was to become a member of the Biracial Committee of Houston. True to her goal, after teaching school in the Houston Independent School District for 3 years, she resigned her post and devoted full time to the NAACP. The results of which was that in 1939, she became the acting president of the Houston chapter of the NAACP. When White assumed the interim role as president, the Houston chapter was beset with financial and management problems. There were several accusations of malconduct, misconduct, and malfeasance leveled against several of the leading offices. In an attempt to rectify the situation, while attending the National NAACP Convention in Richmond, Virginia, in 1939, Lula White spoke to Walter White, executive secretary of the NAACP, and told him that he should come to Houston because, quote, some existing condition in the branch are quite out of line with the aim and purpose of the association, unquote. She requested that Walter White come to Houston as soon as possible, for, quote, a visit from you would mean saving our branch. Rather than making the trip himself, Walter White sent Field Secretary Daisy Lampkin. Upon her arrival, Lampkin found the situation unbelievable and confirmed reports that the Houston branch was being used as a political football by unscrupulous men. Without being specific, Lampkin informed Walter White that, quote, the branch and the Chamber of Commerce have the same men as officers, and there have been so much stealing and so many irregularities that each man is forced to support the other. In spite of this corruption, Lula found several honest and supportive individuals, including William Drake, branch treasurer, and Lula White, whom she described as, quote, honest and upright individual. After Lampkin's investigation was made, a new slate of officers was elected. But this slate of officers was elected devoid of Lula White, who refused the nomination of her peers. Instead, she became a local field worker and director of the membership drive. In large part, because of her field work experience with the NAACP, Lula White became the first full-time salaried executive secretary of the Houston branch in 1943, making her the first black lady of the South to hold such a position. Upon hearing of the news of her new appointment and being unable to control her emotion, Lula wrote Walter White, quote, "Give me 5 years and I'll be done if I won't give you 50,000 members in Houston. I won't be a bit surprised if you won't move your headquarters here," unquote. Combining the two previously mentioned positions, Lula traveled from town to town, covering most of the state, garnering contributions, organizing new branches, and reactivating old ones. While Lula White was indeed a superb salesperson for the NAACP, it is worth noting that she did not become the leader of the Houston branch because she was a yes lady. To the contrary, her aggressiveness and 200-pound body size give her the appearance of somebody who demanded and commanded respect. Determined to live up to her reputation as a loud, sharp-tongued, radical individual, she soon developed an outspoken, almost deliberate, provocative style. Both her natural speaking talent and her defense of the right of free expression reinforced her candor. Lula's rise to prominence owed a great deal to her husband's moral and economic support. Her husband's financial prosperity was such that she could retire from the teaching profession at an early age. He was in the clubbing business, the theater business, but the consequence was that even though they tended to ostracize her, no one tried to harm her because they knew Julius was in the back. Most blacks, educated or not, depended upon a white landlord or employer. They could ill afford to be identified as troublemakers. To oppose segregation and to advocate the right to vote was to invite eviction, loss of credit, and or livelihood. Teachers were notoriously vulnerable to economic retribution. In most southern states, including Texas, they could be fired merely for advocating or belonging to the NAACP. Fortunately, Lula did not have such worries. Julius's business venture not only gave Lula a modest income, but it also provided her with a car and travel money for the NAACP. I might add also that Julius also provided physical protection for Lula White. According to oral sources in Houston, Julius was regarded by most whites of Houston as a bad nigger. Julius carried his gun on his person at all times, as was evidenced from shooting two individuals and killing one. Therefore, even the Ku Klux Klan for some period of time backed off of Lula White. Lula White's liberal image did not spring, however, solely from she and her husband's colorful lifestyle. Her actual position on a wide range of issues proved that her reputation had substance and consistency. Lula White's ascendancy to the helm of the NAACP in 1943 placed her squarely in the forefront of the movement for political equality, that is, the elimination of Texas white Democratic primary. In anticipation of a favorable court decision resulting from the case filed by the NAACP to remove the above subterfuge to voting, Lula White mounted a, quote, "pay your poll tax" campaign before the court issued its decision. When the Supreme Court rendered its decision in Smith v. Allwright, 1944, White hailed the court decision as the second emancipation. She was elated at the decision, but most happy with the timing of it because she was engaged in a vigorous drive that would make Houston the largest NAACP chapter in the South. In that year, she brought 5,000 new members to the organization. Congratulating her for a magnificent job, Daisy Lampkin wrote Lula, quote, "Every day I marvel and am moved by your efficiency and the amount of work that you are able to accomplish," unquote. Probably more than any other black of her time, White argued that a strong and direct black voice was needed in shaping government policies in Texas in the 1940s and 50s. White's idea of such had evolved out of a long experience as a race leader and out of her belief that African Americans had but one fundamental objective, and that was to obtain the status of American citizenship. With so many changes which emanated from Smith v. Allwright, White felt that blacks could not remain passive. In fact, the very success of the decision depended upon a black active response. So in order to translate this idea into practice, Lula White engaged in the politics of reform. Everywhere she went, quote, she took the vote with her. Whether she was speaking before Franklin Beauty School graduate, a civic club, a bridge club, or lay people on the street, the message was the same. Pay your poll tax and go out to vote. Consequently, she took an active part in Houston municipal election in 1946 and pushed for blacks to seek public office just 2 years after they won the right to vote. For those blacks who said that the time was not ripe, that blacks should wait until they were really voters before they start to run for office, Lula castigated them as jealous individuals who did not have the courage to run themselves. In Lula White's opinion, if blacks were to partake of the fruit of victory of Smith v. Allwright, this could not be accomplished by silence, evasion, quiet pressure, or by white men calling on black leaders, closing the doors, and laying upon them the heavy responsibility of averting race trouble. In White's own words, quote, we cannot sit idly by and expect things to come to us. We must go out and get them, unquote. To ensure black participation in the movement for social change, Lula White urged blacks to assume a greater role in the political life of their community, to learn about political techniques and organization, and to prepare for leadership position at the state and local level. She argued convincingly that those who understood the movement for social and political change must fully identify with it and must interpret it to others. In keeping with this premise, Lula White not only urged blacks to vote and seek office, but she held voter registration seminars, helped to select candidates, aided in the drafting of platforms, and used black churches to address public issues without actually campaigning for the candidates. Lula White's posture on the above issue was evidenced by her action in Houston's primary election of 1946. Blacks, heeding the advice of Lula White, went out to the poll in massive numbers in July of 1946. According to one observer, Lula White arrived at her precinct early and in her usual bold manner spoke to the crowd about the platform of various candidates. She was soon ordered by the precinct judge to leave and threatened by the cop that if she would not leave, she would be taken to jail. Lula left, but not before exchanging similar insults and chastising some blacks for being indecisive about candidates who were lukewarm on civil rights. Not unmindful that as an official of the NAACP, she was not supposed to give public support to any candidate, Lula White describes her course of action in the Houston City election of 1946 to Walter White thusly, quote, in all of this, the NAACP is not endorsing candidates, only issues. Yet, Walter, I'm working like hell to get Reverend Ellis Simpson elected and to defeat those people running who are not friends of blacks, unquote. White was successful in her effort to get two black precinct judges elected, but Reverend Ellis Simpson went down in defeat in his bid for city councilman at large. White's identity as a civil rights activist forced her to confront the issue of race, whether it was a white or black person seeking office. But the fearless fighter she was, White was prepared for such a task. A case in point was Houston mayoral election of 1948. Lula White was most critical of mayoral candidate Holger Jefferson. Her opposition to Jefferson stemmed from allegations that this candidate was a member of the Texas Regular, a group which had a bill before the Texas legislature to repeal Smith v. Allwright, and that Jefferson's supporters had tried to keep Reverend Ellis Simpson's name off the ballot for city council. These assertions no doubt caused White grave concern. Writing Roy Wilkins in night of the NAACP, Lula White lashed out at Jefferson, quote, I'm trying to let blacks see what harm they're doing by endorsing Jefferson, because none of the candidates running on Jefferson tickets are worth the you-know-what. They're all against black progress, unquote. As White looked at the attitudes of many blacks toward Jefferson, she argued that blacks were victims of racism and racial stereotypes. To her way of thinking, in response to the attitude and practices of whites, blacks had created their own racial myths, affecting not only their views, but also their political strategies and tactics. So strongly did Lula hold this opinion until Walter White had to remind her that only in a narrow sense was it possible to comprehend black voters exclusively in a minority sense. The National Secretary made it clear that African American population is subjected to the same divisive influence impinging upon the life of every other group in this nation. As Lula continued to lament the same subject, Walter White's assistant wrote her thusly, quote, "People are people, and they vote according to superstitions, rumors, prejudice, religion, jobs, gambling, concessions, handout, good government, whiskey, promise, etc." Unquote. A persistent and determined individual, Lula White had responded to a phrase in Jefferson's platform, a phrase directed toward a white audience which said, quote, "Have the courage to resist minority pressure groups." And as if this was not enough, White soon found herself responding to a city charter political advertisement which made the same assertion. A crusader with a mission, Lula White snapped back in a two-page memorandum, asking the respective party which minority group did they plan to resist. Quote, "You will readily appreciate that as voters and taxpayers of Houston, we expect to have a say in the affairs of our city." Unquote. White's influence among blacks, as well as her opposition to Jefferson's candidacy, was partly responsible for Jefferson's demise on Election Day. In a city and state which had a history of disfranchising its citizens, black Texans had to fight to protect the utility of their voting strength after Smith v. Allwright. With this in mind, Lula White and the NAACP not only conducted vigorous and numerous Pay Your Poll Tax campaigns, but at the same time they lobbied for anti-poll tax legislation. Perhaps no other Texan was more critical of the then-Senator Lyndon Baines Johnson's favorable stance on filibustering of the anti-poll tax bill than was Lula White. Shortly after Johnson gave his blessing to filibustering, Lula White sent him a telegram which said, quote, "The Negroes who sent you to Congress are ashamed to know that you stood on the floors against them today. Do not forget, you went to Washington because of a small majority vote, and that was because of the Negro vote. There will be another election, and we will be remembering what you had to say today." Johnson remembered. 5 years later, he wrote Lula White, commending her for being one of the most outstanding citizens of Texas. Lula White's politics went beyond advocation and protest. The experience in biracial politics of the 1940s demanded cooperation between political activists of both races. Thus, in 1946, she called upon Houston mayoral candidate to support organized labor and was subsequently branded as a communist for her affiliation with that group. In 1948, Lula White supported Henry D. Wallace for president of the United States. Not only did she support Wallace, but she led a movement here in Texas to establish a campaign headquarters for Wallace. Moreover, when Wallace made one of his whistle stop tours to Texas, Lula White invited Wallace to have tea at her house. When this happened, all pandemonium broke loose. All of the major newspapers of Texas carried headlines, and NAACP official supports Wallace. Wallace has communist supporters. And the national office of the NAACP became perturbed over this situation and called Lula White on the carpet. Lula White snapped back, even to the NAACP, and said that, as president of Houston chapter of the NAACP, I did not endorse Henry Wallace, but I endorse him because I have a damn right to endorse anybody I feel like in my personal capacity. That I support Henry Wallace because he's sensitive to the needs of black people. She was subsequently called before the House Un-American Activities Committee, but all to no avail. Therefore, Christy Adair was only standing on the shoulders of Lula White when she refused to divulge the list of NAACP to the House Un-American Activities Committee. Stepping down as president of the Houston branch of the NAACP in 1949, White continued to play an active role in the NAACP as a national field worker, which had as one of its major emphases registering blacks to vote. She pursued this goal of reform politics until her death in 1957. She would have taken credit for laying the foundation if she had known that a lady by the name of Barbara Jordan would become the first black elected to the Texas legislature since Reconstruction and the first black Texan ever elected to the United States Congress, she would have been elated and say that ladies should take a pioneering role in politics. If she had known that after Barbara Jordan, a number of other blacks would be elected to the legislature and a number of other offices, she would have said, this is fine, but we cannot sit by idly. We must go out and elect more blacks to office. In her belief in the electoral process, white might be regarded as a militant lady, outspoken, outstanding, and willing to catch hell. But Lula White did more than survive from day to day. She took risks. She fought back against the odds, and she assumed a place in the forefront of insurgency. She held politicians, both white and blacks, accountable for their action, and made it clear that on issues regarding African Americans, these issues must first be defined and confronted by blacks. In a word, creativity, activism, survival skill, a hard head, a thick skin, and a soft heart are all part of the legacy of Lula White. But underlying Lula White's life is another fundamental motif, and that is the day-to-day reality of working to help blacks control their own destiny. Today, many of us face the future with options and political opportunities that our parents never had. We can dream dreams that they could not name. But as we search for new definitions, new strategies, and new choices of our leaders, we remain rooted in the culture and the history of Matthew Gaines, of Lula White, and Mickey Leland, the culture that they created and preserved. Thus, we seek fusion of politics and work, which generate power, not in the traditional sense of ascendancy over others, but power as energy that bears fruit. As Lula White would argue, there is power in the vote, as black people use it to make their political will felt and to protect their basic civil and human needs. In fighting for these rights, Lula White was not concerned with what some Southerners call a disruption of the South or Texas' economic and political order. It can be argued that as a black woman, urging blacks to enter into politics, Lula White pitted herself against a white male-dominated profession and at the same time challenged the entire political lifestyle of Texas. Unafraid to speak her mind to powerful whites and differing black factions, she tackled almost any issue. By pushing for the right to vote, Lula White fostered political awareness among blacks. Furthermore, she provided communication for the inarticulate, teaching them how to fight and work and ask for what they wanted and needed. All of this comprised the foundation for protests, which came to be the trademark of a lady who was young, gifted, and black.
Dr. Merlene Petrie is a full professor at Texas Southern University in Houston, Texas. She spoke in Dallas February 17, 1990, during the first annual conference on African American history in Texas. Thanks to historian Ruth Weingarten for her contribution to this special Black History Month program. I'm Frieda Worden, and this is WINGS, the Women's International News Gathering Service.